You're listening to ESL Podcasts English Cafe, number 284. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 284. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at eslpod.com. Download this episode's learning guide, an 8 to 10 page guide we provide for all of our current episodes that gives you some help in improving your English. On this cafe, we're going to talk about a famous American by the name of John Audubon and the Audubon Society, which is an important conservation organization in the United States. We'll also continue our series on famous songs in this episode, focusing on On Top of Old Smokey. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. John Audubon was not born John Audubon. He was born with the name Jean Rabin in Haiti in 1785. Haiti is a country in the Caribbean, southeast of the United States. Haiti was ruled by the French. Jean Rabin was born there, but he spent most of his childhood in France. At the age of 18, however, he decided to come to the United States, and he changed his name from Jean to the English version John. Actually, he changed his name to John James, and from Rabin to Audubon. He eventually became the most famous American ornithologist, or a scientist who studies birds. Even as a young boy, John always liked birds. He enjoyed observing them and, perhaps most importantly, sketching them. To sketch, S-K-E-T-C-H, means to draw, especially to create a quick drawing of something to help you remember it later. John enjoyed walking outdoors and observing birds. He was what we would call a naturalist. A naturalist is a person who's interested in nature, things outside of buildings and houses. What made Audubon famous, and people still know his name now in the United States, was his ability to draw and to illustrate those drawings of birds in a way that was much more realistic than other artists were doing at the time. To illustrate means to draw usually something that will be in a book or a magazine, often to explain a concept or to show what something looks like. Photography was still a very new idea in the 19th century when Audubon was working. In addition to his illustrations, Audubon also conducted the first bird banding experiments. A band is a small piece of metal or plastic that's in the shape of a ring. A bird band is a band placed around the leg of a bird. in order to identify specific birds and to be able to track them, that is, to be able to tell when they left and when they came back. Later, Audubon studied taxidermy, T-A-X-I-D-E-R-M-Y. Taxidermy is basically taking dead animals and putting things inside of them so that they look like they are live animals, often to be shown in a museum. Audubon began collecting dead birds and animals in order to create a museum. He continued to improve his drawing, painting, and taxidermy skills, and eventually his collection of different kinds of birds, different bird species, became larger. He wasn't able to make very much money in the United States, but in 1826, he took his drawings of the birds to England, where they were very popular. He printed a book, his most famous book, called Birds of America, which had 435 prints or images of his drawings and paintings, representing almost 15 years of work. Audubon was particularly famous for illustrating birds in their real size, so that he had even large birds on large pieces of paper so that you could see how big the bird actually was, what we would call actual size, or perhaps more commonly life size. When something is life size, it is the actual size it is in real life. John returned to the United States and continued to work as a naturalist and an artist, publishing his second book, Ornithological Biography. He himself discovered 25 new species or types of birds and was elected to several important scientific organizations before he passed away or died in 1851. Today, there are many places named after Audubon. There is a city of Audubon in Pennsylvania, which is in the eastern part of the U.S. There is an Audubon County, which is a division or section of a state in the state of Iowa, in the center part of the U.S. And there's also a John James Audubon State Park in the state of Kentucky, in the central eastern part of the U.S. People now think of Audubon as being one of the first environmentalists in the U.S., people who care about the natural environment and want to help it and protect it. It is because of Audubon's fame, his being well known as a naturalist and as an illustrator, that when an organization was started to help continue his work in protecting and preserving the environment, it was named after him. This organization, called the National Audubon Society, was created in 1905, more than 50 years after he died. The National Audubon Society is still around, that is, it is still active. It is a very important conservation organization that works to protect and conserve the natural environment. Unhappily, several of the birds that Audubon studied have already become extinct, meaning that all of the species has died, often because of things done by we humans. The National Audubon Society tries to prevent other birds and animals from becoming extinct. The society is made up of 500 local chapters. A chapter is like a small organization that is part of a larger organization. Members in the Audubon Society participate in bird watching activities where they go out and try to identify different kinds of birds, as well as in conservation related activities. I myself have never gone bird watching. I've never really been that interested, but I know a few people who are very avid bird watchers. Avid, A-V-I-D, is someone who does something a lot and with great enthusiasm. Now let's continue on the cafe to our series on famous songs. Today we'll be talking about, and of course I'll be singing, a song known to most Americans, especially American children, called On Top of Old Smoky. It's a folk song, a traditional song that has been sung for many years, especially by people from a particular area. The phrase Old Smoky seems to refer to the name of a mountain. We have the Smoky Mountains in the eastern part of the United States. This song seems to refer to a mountain either in that area or in a set of mountains in the more central part of the U.S., the Ozarks. But nobody actually knows for sure what mountain it refers to. There are many different verses or sections of the song, different parts of the lyrics. We'll go back and talk about each one of these. I'll start by singing the first two verses, and then we'll explain what it is all about. On top of Old Smoky, all covered with snow, I lost my true lover for courting too slow. For courting's a pleasure, but parting is grief, and a false-hearted lover is worse than a thief. It's a sad love song about a man who did not get the woman that he wanted for romantic purposes. It begins by saying, on top of Old Smoky, so on top of perhaps this mountain, all covered with snow, meaning the snow is on top of the mountain, I lost my true lover for courting too slow. His true lover is the person that he was in love with and perhaps was in love with him. Why did he lose her? Because he courted her too slowly. He says, I lost my true lover for courting too slow. The reason was he was courting too slow. To court is an old word, an old idea perhaps, that is similar to what we would now more commonly call dating. It was a way to show a woman that you were interested in her. While you were courting her, you may go to her home and spend time speaking with her. It wasn't like dating, or isn't like dating in a modern sense, where you go to a bunch of movies and have dinner. It was a more traditional form of a man expressing interest in a woman that he wanted to be his wife. Unfortunately, the person in this song courted too slow, meaning he took too much time, perhaps, before he asked her to marry him. And so what happened is that he lost her. He did not get to marry her. She married someone else. The second verse says that courting, this process of trying to get a woman to marry you is a pleasure, but parting is grief. Parting means separating or being separated from someone, in this case from your true love. Grief, G-R-I-E-F, means extreme sadness, usually because someone has died, but here because he has lost his true lover. So the second verse is, for courting's a pleasure, meaning courting is a pleasure, but parting is grief. Separation is sadness. And a false-hearted lover is worse than a thief. A false-hearted lover would be someone who tells you that he loves you or she loves you, but isn't really in love with you. And that sort of person is worse than a thief. A thief is someone who steals things. A thief is a criminal. We might also call him a robber, someone who robs you or steals things from you. A false-hearted lover who says that he or she loves you but doesn't is worse than a thief. They steal your heart. There are other verses, but rather than sing those lyrics, I'm going to tell you about a more famous, in some ways, version of the song, what we would call a parody. A parody, P-A-R-O-D-Y, is a funny imitation or copying of something. It's making fun of the original version. For example, there was a parody of the movie Star Wars called Spaceballs. That's an example. Many parodies have been made of the song on top of Old Smokey, but the best known one, the one that I learned as a child, is called On Top of Spaghetti. Spaghetti is the food, what we call pasta, long, thin noodles that are served with tomato sauce and usually balls of meat, meatballs. It's an Italian dish, an Italian kind of food. Here are the parody words that were created by a singer named Tom Glaser in 1963 as a children's song. On top of spaghetti, all covered with cheese, I lost my poor meatball when somebody sneezed. It rolled off the table and onto the floor, and then my poor meatball rolled out of the door. So on top of spaghetti, on the top of your plate of spaghetti, all covered with cheese, instead of snow as in the original version, I lost my poor meatball. My poor here means my unfortunate meatball. Remember, a meatball is just a round ball of meat, of beef, usually. He lost the poor meatball when somebody sneezed. To sneeze is to go, achoo. So obviously when the person sneezed, they blew the meatball, we assume, off of the plate. Then the meatball rolled off the table, meaning the meatball rolled on the table and then fell down onto the floor. And then it continued rolling out of the door, meaning it went past the door into the outside, into the garden, or into the lawn. It's a silly song. The rest of the song, and there are more verses to the song, talk about how the meatball eventually goes into the garden and grows into a meatball tree, which of course is impossible. It's a silly song. Many children like it, and I bet most Americans can sing at least some of the words because they remember them from their own childhood, at least those from my generation. So one more time with the parody. On top of spaghetti, all covered with cheese, I lost my poor meatball when somebody sneezed. It rolled off the table and onto the floor, and then my poor meatball rolled out of the door. Now let's answer some of your questions. Ana, A-N-A, from Brazil, wants to know the difference between sign, S-I-G-N, and signal, S-I-G-N-A-L. Well, you can tell they're pronounced somewhat differently. Sign is pronounced with the G silent. Signal includes G in the pronunciation. Sign can have a couple of different meanings. A sign can be an action to communicate an idea or an object to communicate an idea. The police officer gave the sign for the cars to move forward, to move ahead. Maybe he moved his arm back and forth. That's a sign. It indicates something. It communicates an idea. A sign can be a written symbol that stands for an idea. In mathematics, what we call in English a plus sign indicates that you add two numbers together. A minus sign means you subtract one number from the other. That's a sign. A sign can also be something that has been left behind, an indication that there was something here. If you are walking in the outdoors and you see little holes in the ground, you can look carefully and you may be able to tell if they were made by an animal. Those little holes in the ground are signs that that animal was there. A signal has a similar use as the first meaning I gave for sign, that is, an action to communicate an idea. For example, the police officer waved his hands, moved his arms back and forth, giving the signal for the cars to move forward. We refer to a traffic signal as three lights, red, yellow, and green, that indicate whether you should stop, go forward, or move forward with caution, carefully. Signal has an additional meaning, which is communication that is transmitted via or through something like radio waves. They're transmitted through the air. So you might have radio waves that come into your radio and you're able to listen to radio stations. Those waves, we call them, just like the waves in an ocean, would be called a radio signal. You have television signals. You even have, for your computer, things like Wi-Fi signals. It's often difficult to figure out when to use sign and signal in the first definition that I gave, meaning communicating an idea. Sometimes we use signal, sometimes we use sign. When you're talking about traffic, for example, a traffic signal is almost always something that is electric, with lights, often lights that change colors or turn on and off quickly, flash, we would say. However, things like pieces of metal or wood that say stop or yield. Those are traffic signs when they are just painted on a piece of metal or a piece of wood. Those would typically be called traffic signs. If you're not sure when to use signal or sign in the first meaning of those words that we discussed, you can usually use sign. People will know what you're talking about. It's a little more common. Roger, originally from Brazil but now living in Japan, wants to know the difference between two phrasal verbs, to figure out and to find out. To figure out means to solve a problem or to answer a question. Can you help me figure out this math problem? You're asking the person to help you get the solution, the answer. To find out can also mean to learn the answer to a question, but you could learn it by yourself or someone could tell you. If someone tells you the answer, you found out the answer, but you didn't figure out the answer. Usually figure out, even if you're getting help, is something that you mostly do yourself. To find out has an additional meaning, which is to learn the truth when someone has done something wrong, to discover the truth. I found out who killed the President of the United States. His name was Lee Harvey Oswald, acting alone in 1963. I'm sorry, that's who did it. I found that out by reading a book. You can find things out many different ways. I found out that my brother is allergic to certain kinds of fish, meaning he can't eat certain kinds of fish. I found out by giving him some fish and then watching his face turn red. Not really. Turn blue, I think. So that's figure out, solve a problem, usually by yourself or with someone's help, and find out, to learn the answer to a problem or the solution to a problem, or to learn the truth of something about someone who did something wrong. Finally, Gabriel, G-A-B-R-I-E-L, in Italy, wants to know the meaning of an expression, to beat a dead horse, or sometimes to beat a dead cat, which is my preferred version. First of all, to beat means to hit a person many times, or to hit an animal many times, in order to hurt it, to injure it. To beat a dead horse means to waste time trying to do something that has already been done or already been attempted or tried. If the horse is dead, you don't need to hit it. It's already dead. To beat a dead horse is to do something that is useless. To beat a dead cat means the same thing. It's not very common, however, although perhaps it should be. The British English version of this phrase is flogging a dead horse. To flog, F-L-O-G, means the same as to beat. And you will also hear that word flog, usually if it's in American English in a historical context, talking about, for example, when the owners of slaves would flog their slaves. They would take what we would call a whip, a long piece of rope or leather, and hit the slave with that. That would be to flog. But in American English, it's to beat a dead horse. By the way, you can also use this expression to mean that there's no chance of what you are doing is going to be successful or is going to have a different result from the result you already have received. Stop beating a dead horse. You didn't get the girl. You didn't get the girl to say yes when you wanted her to go out on a date. That's good advice for everyone. If you have a question, you can email us. Our email address is ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. Copyright 2011 by the Center for Educational Development.